Well, 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 you think it's going to be a quiet off day, and then bam, the Rangers go and make a trade that turns the whole day upside down. Welcome to episode 99 of the New Ice City podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and we have a lot to discuss and a little bit of time to discuss it. Let me take you guys into where I was at today. Last night, both I and my fiance had to work late because I had a game and she had something that she had to cover for her job. And so the baby slept at my mother's house. And for us, that was an excuse to sleep in. So we stayed in bed pretty late. The Rangers weren't supposed to practice today. I had done so much writing in the last handful of days that the plan was, okay, all I'm doing today is the podcast and spending some quality time with the family. Going to go get the little guy at some point in the afternoon. At least that was the hope. Then, while I'm recording an interview with Shang Peng, you guys have heard him on the show once before, he covers the Sharks for San Jose Hockey Now, to talk through potential trades between the Rangers and the Sharks, a lot of stuff about Timo Meier, who, as everyone knows, has been one of the most rumored names to the Rangers in the last few weeks. And a lot of that conversation, frankly, was about why we didn't think the deal was going to happen, and especially what I saw as the hurdles to that deal. But that interview's a waste now. There's no way I'm going to play it for you guys. It's a bunch of nonsense at this point. And right as I'm done with the interview, like within moments that we stopped recording, my phone starts going off. Frank Saravalli of the Daily Faceoff had tweeted that the Rangers were acquiring Vladimir Tarasenko from the St. Louis Blues. Of course, I start hitting the phones and doing as much digging as I can. Next thing I know, I hear about Libor Hajek going on waivers. And I had a feeling, I had written about this guy before, that the Rangers were also interested in Nico Mikkola, who is a left-handed defenseman that I knew was in their price point, that I knew was a guy that they would have some interest in. So then I get confirmation, okay, it's not just Tarasenko that the Rangers are acquiring. They're acquiring Nico Mikkola. And then from there, everything started falling into place, got confirmation on exactly what the trade details were. The Rangers get those two players. They fill their two biggest needs, and we've talked about this several times. They wanted a right winger who would add some scoring punch. And they wanted Mikkola, or more specifically, a left-handed defenseman, which they get in Mikkola. And for that, to fill their two biggest needs on this roster, they gave the St. Louis Blues a conditional first-round pick for the upcoming draft. It's almost certainly going to remain in the upcoming draft. The condition is that if the Dallas Stars pick that the Rangers own the rights to ends up in the top 10, which it isn't, the Stars are going to the playoffs. So it's kind of a condition that is very far-fetched. But the more important part of the condition is that it will be the later of the two first-round picks that the Rangers own. Both first-round picks in this year's draft for the Rangers are almost surely going to be in the 20s. And if it's the later of those two, you're probably talking about late 20s, or I'm sure Rangers are hoping if they were to win the Stanley Cup, it would be the 32nd overall pick. So you're talking about a very late pick in the first round going to the St. Louis Blues. That's the centerpiece of this deal as far as what the Blues are getting. They also sent a conditional 2024 fourth rounder, but if we're being real, that's going to be a third round pick because the condition is whether or not the Rangers make the playoffs this year. So you've got a first rounder this year. You've got what will very likely be a third rounder next year. And then essentially some spare parts. I hate to say it like that, but that's really what it is. The Rangers sent St. Louis Sammy Blais, who, if you think about it, it's almost a shock that he was wanted because I believe the Rangers were considering, if it came down to it, putting this guy on waivers. This is a guy who they were paying over $1.5 million as a cap hit this season. He's been very ineffective for them and was almost surely not going to be in their lineup after the trade deadline. He just went down on a conditioning stint to Hartford. So this is a guy that everybody knew the Rangers wanted to clear his cap hit. and yet they were able to include him in this deal. And they send Hunter Skinner, who was a fourth-round pick for them a few years ago, a young defenseman prospect. But this is a guy who I think has very little chance of making it to the NHL. He's got a big, powerful shot. I know scouts like that about him. But if you look at the Rangers' defense, they've got five guys who are locked in for the foreseeable future: Fox, Lindgren, Miller, Trouba, and Schneider. And the sixth spot has been the spot where they want to plug. They got Mikkola to do that for the time being. And then if you look at what's coming in the pipeline, Zach Jones, Matthew Robertson, there are a few defenseman prospects, especially left-handed. Skinner's a right-handed defenseman prospect, who the Rangers certainly, I know, ranked above Skinner. So they gave away a fringe prospect, a player who they were looking to clear his cap hit anyway, a first-round pick. And listen, there's value to a first-round pick, but again, it's going to be very late, and what I think will amount to a third-round pick. And they get to plug their two biggest holes. I don't want to be overly optimistic. I don't want to be a guy who's all sunshine and rainbows and sounds like a homer or whatever you might call me. But at first blush, looking at this trade and the way that this works out for the Rangers, it's really hard to look at this as anything other than a win. Obviously, the production from Tarasenko is going to be the biggest part of this. And you look at where he's at this season, his numbers are down. He has 29 points through 38 games. He's only scored 10 goals. This is a guy who scored over 33 goals six times in his career. So his goal scoring is down. But that whole Blues team has been a mess. So I know what the Rangers are hoping is that this change of scenery will refresh him. The chance to play with Artemi Panarin will spark him. Those guys have a friendship, my understanding is, off the ice. They've played together for Team Russia before. We know that we've been looking ever since Jesper Foss pretty much left this team, and then Pavel Buchnevich, who ironically went to the St. Louis Blues a couple years ago for Blais. The Rangers have been searching for this top six right winger, and Tarasenko, you know, as good as guys like Andrew Kopp and Frank Vetrano were for them last year, Tarasenko is clearly the biggest upside play that they've been able to make in that spot since they traded Buchnevich. So you factor that in, and it seems like totally a risk worth taking. If the production doesn't work out, then maybe we'll judge this trade more harshly in the future. But right now, getting to fill your two biggest needs with two quality players. And Tarasenko is a guy that's been highly productive in the NHL. He's 31, so maybe he's getting toward the back end of his prime, but 31 isn't ancient. I'm saying this as a 35-year-old, so I certainly don't look at 31 as ancient. And I think in a hockey context, 31 is still well within an age where you can expect a pretty high performance level. And what multiple people have said to me about this guy is, in years past, he dealt with injuries, but last year, he was healthy for pretty much the entire season. He posted 82 points. And this year, he's been healthy for pretty much the entire season. So he's had back-to-back seasons where he's been able to stay on the ice. And if he stays on the ice and the Rangers plug him on that top line with Panarin and Mika Zibanejad, which is what I believe the plan is going to be, that's pretty exciting. That is, what could you argue, the most talented Ranger line since, I don't know, are we going back to the 90s? Because I don't know if I've seen a line that talented for the Rangers in my time covering the team. So again, there's a lot to be excited about when you look at this deal. And we're seeing a pattern here with Chris Drury as far as his strategy for the assets that he's willing to part with and the assets that he's going to protect when it comes to these deals. It worked out very well for him last year. What you're seeing him do is he's willing to trade draft picks. He's also finding ways to collect draft picks too. That Nils Lundqvist trade prior to the season, that gave him an extra first round pick that we were all saying at the time, now they're going into this draft with two first round picks. One of those is very much in play if the right trade comes along. So the Rangers still will have a first-round pick in the upcoming draft, but they were able to weaponize another one of those picks. He's willing to deal picks because he knows the window for this team is open right now, and they already have a ton of young players on the roster. But what he's more reluctant to part with are those young players on the roster. I've pretty much been saying this to you guys for months, as far as I can remember, especially, I think, beginning last year when the Patrick Kane rumors started bubbling to the surface. I did not think it made any sense, nor did I hear from anyone that I talked to, that the Rangers, at this point in time, were going to even consider dealing Alexi Lafreniere, Philip Hedel, or Kaapo Kakko. Those guys have been a massive spark for the Rangers in the last few weeks, but even if they weren't playing at the high level that they're playing at right now, trading young, controllable assets like that with upside, these guys are first-round picks, highly touted guys who are still incredibly young and still developing, giving up on them now for what amounts to anybody they would have acquired would have probably been a rental. That is bad business. I never believed that they were going to seriously entertain trading one of those guys at this deadline. I also didn't think they wanted to part with Brennan Hoffman, who's their top prospect who hasn't arrived at the NHL yet. I think their other prospects, let's call them the B-level guys, those guys were available. Although, you look at this trade, Drury protected those guys as well. Will Cooley, Zach Jones, Matthew Robertson, Dylan Garand, Brett Berard, Adam Sikora. That's the next wave behind Hoffman, and none of those guys got touched in this deal either. Drury has shielded his young talent. He's shielded his prospects, for the most part, minus the Lundqvist trade, but that was inevitable because the guy had requested a trade, and he was blocked on that right-wing depth chart in New York. I mean, not right-wing, right-defenseman depth chart in New York. Other than that, he's protected those guys, and he's been willing to trade the draft picks. That strategy worked out really well for them at last year's deadline, and I think it was effectively executed today, Thursday, the day of this recording. Everyone's always going to point to the Pavel Buchnevich trade with Drury, and even though I know the Rangers felt like there was no chance they were going to sign him long-term and they needed to trade him, that trade, you can spin it however you want. It was a bad trade. It looks ugly today given how good Buch has been and how bad Blais was for the Rangers. But since that trade, which will go down as a blemish on his resume, Drury's done pretty well with a lot of these trades that he's executed in the last year plus. So I think right now you're giving him high marks on this one. I did want to touch on Timo Meier and Patrick Kane because those guys were linked to the Rangers more by various different reporters and people online and whoever in the last year or so than Tarasenko was. Here's what I know about those two. Meier, and this was a lot of our conversation today with Shang, which will now go into the ether, go into the atmosphere and never get heard by anybody, which is unfortunate. I feel bad for Shane for taking up all that time of his and then not using the interview, but I digress. Meier was the most appealing option of anybody that was available to the Rangers. He was certainly a more appealing option than Tarasenko. He's 5 years younger. He's got 30 goals so far this season as opposed to 10 for Tarasenko. He's the most shoot-first of all the shoot-first guys that you could look at on this trade market. Last I looked, he ranked second in the NHL in shots on goal. He's also a big, strong guy who, as Shang explained in our interview, loves getting to those high danger areas, but can also carry the puck in transition. He's really effective with his zone entries. There's a lot of things to like about that guy. The problem was, A, to get him, the Rangers were probably going to need to consider trading one of those young, really strong assets that we talked about, whether it was Lafreniere, Hedel, Kakko, Hoffman. And on top of that, to keep him beyond this season, they would have needed to probably sacrifice multiple other players. There was really no way for them to keep him beyond this season unless they were letting one or two of those young players walk and then probably having to shave cap space in other ways as well. So keeping him beyond this season was never realistic. They probably would have had to view him as a rental. And to pay the substantial trade package price that you were going to have to pay for him, knowing it was nearly impossible to sign him beyond this season, that always made Meier feel like an incredible long shot to me. I never really bought into those rumors, and at least as far as my sources were concerned, I knew the Rangers loved the player, but I also knew that they had their doubts about whether or not they could make it work for the reasons that I just laid out. Patrick Kane, from what I'm hearing, also would have likely cost more as far as what the Rangers would have had to send to the Blackhawks than what they sent to St. Louis for Tarasenko. So they would have had to pay a little bit more in the trade package. But also, increasingly, I had a source confirm this today, the concerns about whatever injury he's dealing with, a lot of people believe that it's a hip, that backed the Rangers off a little bit as well on the Kane stuff. So Meyer and Kane went to the back burner, and then the ability to go out and get Tarasenko, and really the only piece that went back to the Blues of value in that deal was the first round pick to be able to do all that. And on top of that, get them to retain 50% of Tarasenko's salary and get Nico Mikkola, who's a defenseman who they like for their bottom pair. Well, all that adds up to what amounts to a pretty obvious trade, I think, for the Rangers to make. Mikkola is a guy I want to touch on a little bit. I've been asking around about him a bit. Doesn't have any point production. I think he has 3 assists in 50 games this year. That's not what you're going to get from this guy. The Rangers love size from their defensemen. You can criticize that, but they've made it painfully obvious. This guy's 6'4", and they love that about him. They see him as a significant upgrade over Ben Harper. I think a lot of people would probably find that hard to dispute. They see him as a guy who uses his length well. They see him as a very responsible defensive player. You can look at his metrics. Not only this season, but even last season, they've dipped. But earlier in his career, this is a really promising young defenseman to a lot of people. The Blues were very high on him, from what I understand, earlier in his career. And as I touched on earlier, the whole team has struggled this year in St. Louis. So to be able to throw him in on a trade like this and have a pretty clear upgrade for your bottom pair with maybe a little upside if you can unlock that potential that he showed early in his career. Drury called him a shutdown defenseman. That's a stretch. But this is a guy who pretty much everyone will tell you uses his length well, he's fairly mobile, and he's usually going to make the right play in the D zone. And that's what the Rangers want from their bottom pair. They want a guy that they're going to be able to rely on. They're not looking for flash down there. That's why Zach Jones didn't work out. That was never the kind of player that the Rangers envisioned to play with Schneider on their bottom pair. Mikkola fits the mold that they're looking for, and I think everybody, I know a lot of fans were taking issue with Harper in recent weeks, although he had a bad game on Wednesday, but I think he had been steadier than at least I thought he would be for a stretch. I'll give him credit for that. He slots in nicely as your 7th defenseman now, and Mikkola gives you a valuable upgrade on the bottom pair. The kicker, as I touched on for this trade, was getting St. Louis to retain 50% of the money on Tarasenko's contract. What that leaves them with now moving forward, they put Libor Hájek on waivers this afternoon, which is pretty hard to believe because for the last 2 years, they've been incredibly reluctant to put that guy on waivers, even though they've also been incredibly reluctant to play him. It's been a tough situation for him. That's just a side note, but I do feel kind of bad for him. He's a nice guy, and it's just been, I'm sure this has not been easy on him. But they finally put Hájek on waivers today. We'll see if he gets claimed or not. If he doesn't, he'll go to Hartford. With that, and the Tarasenko money that's being retained by St. Louis, the Rangers by tomorrow, by Friday, by the time you're listening to this, will have 22 players on their roster and a little bit over $1 million in available cap space. I've checked with a few people. I've done the math myself. By the time they get to the March 3rd trade deadline, through the accrual process that we've outlined before on this show, that $1 million or so will turn into $1.5 million or so. About $1.6 is what they'll be looking at by March 3rd. With that $1.6, the Rangers will be able to afford one more move. They don't even necessarily need a player who makes $1.6. If they send another player back, a bottom of the roster guy like a Lecision, or I do believe that they're entertaining offers on Vitali Kratsov right now. That's kind of a side note. We can get into a deeper conversation on that. But if they sent somebody else back, that 1.6 could really be over $2.5 million-ish. So they have some space to maneuver here. And the position that I believe that they're going to want to fill and we've kind of talked about this in three parts every time we've had the trade deadline conversation on this show. Number one, they wanted a scoring right winger. Number two, they wanted a left-handed defenseman. And number three, I firmly believe they want to add, whether you want to call it a bottom six guy, a fourth line guy, somebody as a forward who will improve the team's speed, who can play the forechecking style that Gerard Gallant wants from players in those roles, and will just bring overall energy, defensive responsibility, those sorts of elements, preferably a guy who kills penalties. That's what they're looking for right now. If they can add a little offense on top of that, that's great, but I think they're looking for a guy to improve the fourth line. The fourth line has been a clear issue, especially in recent weeks. Gallant's been playing them like 5 or 6 minutes a night. They've basically been a three-line team for the last handful of weeks. So I believe that they're going to look to make that kind of a deal probably closer to the deadline so they give themselves more time to accrue that cap space that we talked about. I'm just going to give you a few names that I'm monitoring. One, everybody mentions this guy all the time, but I think it's logical. The Rangers loved what they got from him last year. Tyler Motte. Looks like this Ottawa Senators will entertain offers on him. He's making 1.35, I believe, so they could definitely fit him. Nick Bjugstad from the Arizona Coyotes. This dude's like 6'6", plays multiple positions, good forechecker, good skater, can chip in a little offense. He's a guy that I think would really boost their fourth line if they could get their hands on him. Sam Lafferty from the Chicago Blackhawks. I think a lot of teams are interested in him, but that's a guy who also fits in that kind of role. And then one of the guys I discussed with Shang in that interview that no one will ever hear is Steven Lorenz from the San Jose Sharks. Another big guy, versatile, really effective in that forechecking system that the Carolina Hurricanes like to play last season. And he's a guy that's only on the hit for $1 million, a little bit more than that for this year and next. So those are four names that I'm monitoring and keeping my eye on, but it could be anybody under the radar. You know, you look at any of these teams that are going to be selling off pieces, I'm sure the Rangers are exploring all of those rosters for guys that fill that speed forechecking need that they, I believe, have. Once you get that, or even actually we should probably talk about before you do that, and then we could talk about what happens if you do get that player. But the final question that everyone's asking now that this Tarasenko Mikola deal is in the books is, what does this mean for the Rangers lineup? First of all, I firmly believe the top line is going to end up being Panarin, Zibanejad, and Tarasenko. As we touched on earlier, that'll be the most talented Rangers line maybe some people, especially young listeners, have ever seen. So I think that will get the first crack at it. If it doesn't work, then you adjust from there. But my impressions, I had a long conversation with Mika Zibanejad about this on Tuesday. Those guys, him and Panarin, in their previous 3 years together, always felt like, because Mika had his thing with Kreider and Panarin had his thing with Ryan Strome, that it was never realistic that they were going to play together for a long stretch. So they never really seemed to put much time into figuring each other out at that five-on-five level. But now, because they realize that the kid line is working so well together, and because it's become clear that Trocheck is better off with guys like Kreider and Gaudreau and Vesey, who play that simpler style of game, that up and down kind of game, it's almost by default that Panarin and Zibanejad have to play together. And as competitive as those two guys are, as talented as those two guys are, they are really determined to make it work. But Mika has been very open, and I would encourage everybody to go read this story on loha.com/sports/Rangers. Mika's been very open about it's not quite clicking the way that we want it to yet. And there are valid reasons for that. I touched on how little they played together at 5-on-5 in the past. On top of that, and Mika was open about this, Panarin, he disguises his passes so well. He's so unpredictable that figuring a guy out like that is much more difficult than figuring out your average player. Of course, Panarin, people dream about playing with a guy like that. But there's a little more to it. It's more complicated than it is with a lot of other players to really make it work the way that it should. I know they've been putting an extra video session. I know they've been talking a lot in the last couple weeks. Mika told me, we want this to work really, really badly. So I think even though it hasn't looked great, that they seem to be asking for the time to work out the kinks, work through those growing pains, and see if they can make it work. And with Tarasenko on the opposite wing, you got a pass-first guy like Panarin and a guy like Tarasenko who scored 33 goals or more in six seasons in his career. You've got a guy that has been at certain points one of the premier goal scorers in the NHL. That seems like it should be a good fit. So those are the dots that I'm connecting. I think that's going to be the top line. The kid line, they've been red hot. Filip Hedl is just on fire right now. 7 goals in his last 5 games. He's 1 goal away from reaching 20. The price tag on this guy is going through the roof right now as he heads toward his RFA summer. So Hedl is a guy that is carrying that line. But Lafreniere and Kako are also playing really well. I think Lafreniere, he had about a month where he just looked like his confidence was shot. And he wasn't doing a whole lot to be encouraged about. But his last handful of games, the few before the All-Star break and the couple that we've seen after the All-Star break, he scored goals in back-to-back games. But beyond that, he just looks more engaged to me. He looks like a guy who all of a sudden is feeling more confidence. And there's just something about those three together right now. Kako had a really nice assist to Hedl on Wednesday night. You cannot touch that right now. I know people will make the argument that Kako worked really well on the top line, yada, yada, yada. You got Tarasenko now to play on that top line. The kids need to stay together, and they need to get substantial ice time. We've seen that ticking up. Gallant is showing more and more, slowly but steady, finding trust in those guys. And so the kid line got to keep that thing going while it's going well. And the whether you want to call it second line, third line, Trocheck and Kreider, you know, are going to stick together on that line. The question is, who plays the right wing? It's either going to be, I think, Jimmy Vesey or Barclay Gaudreau, which then means the other one of them is heading to the fourth line. And that's really the only question that's remaining, is how is Gallant going to arrange this fourth line? There are a couple different ways he can go. If you move Gaudreau down to the fourth line and you play Vesey with Kreider and Trocheck, and that was the line that was doing really well, if you guys remember, leading up to Christmas. If Gaudreau goes to the fourth line, I think that's an ideal lineup for the Rangers. You play him at center, and then you can scratch Jake LeCision, who, listen, his faceoff percentage is good, but other than that, this guy has not really shown you much to say that he deserves an every night lineup spot. And then on the wings with Gaudreau, you're definitely going to get Julien Gauthier back in there. The only other option is Vitali Kratsov. And here's where I hesitate. Gerard Gallant has come out and said, Vitali Kratsov is not a fourth line type of player. I don't think that role suits him. I agree with that. So the obvious thing to counter that would say, okay, well, why not play him in the top nine? But Gallant has also made it pretty clear that he's not crazy about him in that role right now either. So my hunch is that you're going to see either Vesey or Gaudreau at left wing, LeCision in the middle, and Gauthier on the right wing. If you wanted to scratch LeCision, which again, I think there's a very valid argument for, are you going to have a fourth line that has Kratsov on the left wing with Gaudreau at center? That's not built the way that you know Gallant wants his fourth line to be built. So it feels like there's still one puzzle piece that doesn't quite fit in the right spot. I wrote this on Twitter today. You could make an argument for Kreider, Trocheck, and Kratsov on one line, and then your fourth line has Vesey, Gaudreau, and Gauthier. And that feels like a really quality fourth line. The problem is, I don't think Gallant is going to do that. I think that he, and this is somewhat valid, might have questions about how Kratsov would fit with Kreider and Trocheck. They seem to work better with a guy who plays that simpler style like a Vesey or a Gaudreau. And, you know, my feeling on Kratsov is just, I think it's time for a fresh start for him. I feel bad for the guy. I feel like it's been a really tough go for him this season. I don't think he's played particularly well. I think I've been pretty clear on that. But I also think it's hard to play well when you're constantly looking over your shoulder and worrying about, if I make any little mistake, I might get scratched or demoted or what have you. So that's kind of the question, is this an opening for Kratsov to get back in the lineup? Maybe, but probably not. And if not, then that probably means your fourth line is going to be Lecision, Gauthier, and then either VC or Gaudreau. So we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, you look ahead and some of those names that we're talking about that you could target at the trade deadline to fill in that fourth line role, you add one of those guys in there with Gaudreau and Gauthier, and that also gives you a pretty strong looking fourth line. So we'll see how that all plays out. Last thing I want to mention, and I got to tell you guys, because I had to throw out the interview with Shang, which unfortunately I would have loved to share, but at this point doesn't really make sense. And because it's late, I had to write two stories today when I wasn't supposed to write at all. And it's dinner time and I hear my son out there asking for me at the door. I'm cutting this podcast short. It's just going to be the analysis of the trade and we're going to call it at that. But the last thing I want to touch on, because I think it's getting overshadowed by all this trade news, is there was a story that I wrote that went up on the website, loha.com/sports/Rangers, also available on northjersey.com or any USA Today publication that you subscribe to. I, over the course of the last week or two, got this idea when I realized that Wednesday was going to be the five-year anniversary of the letter. Everyone knows the letter where the Rangers announced that they were going to go into this rebuild period. And I made more calls on that than I have on any story this season. It might have been one of the longest stories I've ever written since I've been on this beat for the last four seasons. I'm really proud of the way that it came out. And I think you guys will be fascinated to read this. There are so many little details and nuggets about what went down behind the scenes, especially in those first 2 years when the rebuild was really full bore. And even then afterwards with the Panarin signing and some of the trades that were made and draft picks and all that stuff, you know, it goes from a meeting where the Rangers had lost three games in a row in early February of 2018. And I had a couple different sources confirm to me and describe to me this emergency meeting that was called by the owner, James Dolan, where he had all the top executives in there and basically threw out the question, is the team right now good enough to win the Stanley Cup? The Rangers were a few points out of a playoff spot. They were struggling. They had this aging core. And the determination was made in that meeting, which multiple sources also told me Jeff Gorton was already kind of leaning into and working toward, that team was not good enough and that it was time to go full bore on the rebuild, tear it down, stockpile as many young assets and draft picks as they could, and then see how quickly they could turn that thing around. And you could nitpick individual trades. And within this story, all the nitty-gritty details about the Tampa trade where they sent McDonough and JT Miller to the Lightning and the guys that they were trying to get in that trade, the guys that they ended up getting back, the missteps in that trade, the trades that went really well, Mika Zibanejad, the Boston trade where they sent Rick Nash there and they basically turned that into Ryan Lindgren, Ryan Strom, and Keandre Miller. That certainly worked out very well for the Rangers. All these different conversations that were going on behind the scenes, as well as the draft stuff too. I got some really juicy stuff on what was being talked about with the Elias Anderson pick, how the Vitali Kratsov pick went down, what people think has gone wrong since then, some of the other picks that have worked out really well for the Rangers. So it's incredibly detailed. There's so much stuff in there, and I'm definitely going to share it more in the next couple of days, but I wanted to touch on that a little bit at the end of this show and encourage everybody, if you get a chance, go read it. I think it's one of the cooler stories, one of the ones that I'm more proud of that I've written this entire season, pretty much in my entire time on the beat, just because there's so many layers to it. And I'm so fascinated by the inner workings of the front office and how these decisions are made and what the debates were in these different situations where they had to make really huge decisions that were going to alter the course of the franchise. So I wanted to leave you with that. Mention that story. Hope you guys get a chance to check it out. If you do, let me know what you think. Again, I got to cut this podcast off at this point. Next week, we'll be back with episode 100. Believe it or not, 100 episodes. Definitely have a guest for that one. I'll definitely get back to taking your questions for that one as well. But until then, enjoy dreaming about Tarasenko and Mikola and maybe whatever else Chris Drury has up his sleeve in these next few weeks. This has been a fun day. It's been a crazy day. But a fun day, and I'm sure you guys are loving it as well. So enjoy it. and I will talk to you next time.